Hi, my name is Maya, and I'll be talking to you today about how floss meets social science research and lives to tell the tale. So, let me start with a quote. If I had asked people what they wanted, they would have said faster horses. This is a quote that is often attributed to Henry Ford and used to pinpoint users' inability to convey their needs to innovators. This is the opposite of how open source development and open research attain growth and improvement by valuing and promoting user feedback to reach community-oriented goals. As a user of FLOSS tools for open research in social science myself, I'm excited to share some of my experiences with you today. I'll be talking specifically about a team project that I worked on to produce and analyze a Twitter follow graph of last year's FOSDEM and ChaosCon participants. The project used open source tools and agile management. Data was collected with a command line tool, Torc. Network visualization was done with Gephi. And Framagit provided a collaborative framework for managing code, data visualization, and text. Implementing this project led to insight about what it takes for social scientists like me, who have minimal tech knowledge or exposure to open source values, to practice open research with FLOSS tools. I'll specifically address three types of challenges I faced: training, documenting, and collaborating. But first, let me tell you a little bit about my user background. So when I started working on this Twitter follow graph project, I had minimal experience with digital tools for research. I had been exposed to the very basics, interacting with my computer's terminal, understanding how to use version control with Git, and executing code in Jupyter notebooks. I had also practiced using some no-code tools, such as Gephi, Hive, and YouTube Data Tool, and had really liked it. I was eager to do more. Now for a bit about the project itself. It started like any other research project with a literature review. Most of the articles I came across were using proprietary all-in-one analytics tools to draw conclusions about data they were gathering from Twitter's API with what seemed like unfettered access. As firm believers in open science and the need for transparency in the methods we used to collect our data, the team and I agreed it was an ethical and methodological imperative to use open source tools. I knew I needed to harvest tweets, but I didn't know which tool to use for the job. I ended up using Torc, a command line tool developed by Documenting the Now, a community data activism project supporting the ethical collection, use, and preservation of social media. They're closely tied to the Black Lives Matter movement. Truth be told, I'd initially intended to use Gazouillard, a tool developed by Sciences Po's Media Lab, but I ran into an error in the first steps of installation. And at the time, I was anxious about getting the project started and not even aware that there could be documentation or a friendly teammate that could help me solve the problem. Because I'd been successful at installing Torc on my own personal computer a few days earlier, I simply redirected to the easiest available solution. So this opening anecdote leads me to address the technical and value-based challenges of being a FLOSS tools user in a social science setting. So I'll start with some technical challenges. First off, I don't know how to code. This means that I didn't exploit Torc to the fullest or use its Python library programmatically. I had to rely on a third party to build a network I eventually imported into Gephi. Once I was in Gephi, the second challenge I had was with the community detection calculation, which caught me a bit by surprise. Because I was new to social network analysis, it didn't occur to me that this calculation would yield a different result each time it was launched, unless I expressly told it to always start with the same node in the network. Once I realized this, I wrote everything down in our project wiki and learned an important lesson about documentation that I'll go into more detail about in a few minutes. One of Gephi's main advantages is its real-time visualization feature that lets you zoom in to get high granularity. And for me, the preview screen was blank. This was my third challenge. The bug fix I found on the forum wasn't effective, but thankfully I could rely on the separate preview tab to visualize the network as a whole and zoom in, although not as smoothly. In the long run, this bug ended up being pretty frustrating, and it led the team to explore other alternatives. One of these is a different open source network visualization tool expressly developed for Twitter data. It's called Twitter Explorer. Its advantage is being very user-friendly, but in its early stages of development, it did lack many of the functions that Gephi provided. For instance, Twitter Explorer only has one layout option, whereas Gephi has several. Because we wanted to perform a somewhat in-depth analysis of our network, I ended up sticking with Gephi for this project. But for other projects, Twitter Explorer was quite handy. The last technical challenge I'll bring up here has to do with complying with Twitter API's terms and services. Despite being stated in plain text on Torque's website, it really wasn't clear to me what part of the data I collected could be shared with the world. It was thanks to one of the follow-up interviews with a participant that the issue came up and that we dehydrated, quote-unquote, our Twitter data to make it shareable, meaning we only provided a list of tweet IDs in the project's public Framegit repository. Now, I'd like to address some value-based challenges. So, number one, I had to learn to practice transparency, which is an integral part of open research on many levels. First, there's the transparency that pertains to the training and tools we use. As I mentioned earlier, learning how to use open source tools and integrating them into research methodologies seemed essential. Then there's the transparency that pertains to documentation. As I mentioned earlier, this project taught me the importance of documentation written by others as a crucial resource for troubleshooting moments, but also documenting my own processes as a way of ensuring reproducibility. Case in point, improper documentation led me to experience difficulties reproducing community detection results during the visualization process in Gephi. Finally, there's the transparency that pertains to collaborating. I had to learn to shake the feelings of insecurity I had about practicing research in a field that was new for me, and sharing a work in progress with actors from the community. Despite high-level training in research, I'd never socialized any of my reflections, processes, or even results outside of publishable material such as literature reviews or academic articles. The reflexivity that goes into practicing open research was intimidating at first, but I've come to appreciate it as a basis for better communication with team members, as well as with people outside the project. It's also an earnest way of engaging people in collaboration. This leads me to the next value-based challenge, two of them, in fact, collaborative participation and community development. Framegit is a great organizational tool for handling collaboration. Despite being new to me, the collaborative framework and approach to labor it offers made it easy to chart out objectives, assign tasks, and agree on bug-solving mechanisms as a team. It also made internal planning easier versus implementing ad hoc solutions to solve problems as they occurred along the way, which also happened, but less. So you might be wondering what the challenge was then. Well, in my previous experience, much of the labor in research was hierarchically organized, and collaboration was codified according to various factors, such as seniority, to give just one example. So using tools that are designed for collaborative participation feels bewildering at first, and challenges the proprietary feelings I was taught to harbor about my work. On the other hand, it made it easier to move away from top-down approaches to research and present results as a common achievement. There's also an external dimension to collaborative participation that is crucial to making research processes and results a public common good. That is, the possibility to evolve thanks to feedback from participants. Here we go. So this makes open research gain relevance and impact through community building and outreach, but it's not automatic. Time and resources need to be spent on building communities around projects like ones that we've heard about in this dev room today. This can only take place when the research goals and a developing community's goals are aligned. Our Twitter Follow Graph project that brought together five people from three different institutions was inspired by the desire to explore the ecosystem around FLOSS tools and open science. Our assumption is that FLOSS tools, but also open source values, will become increasingly integrated into research processes as the move towards open science gains more traction throughout Europe. We've done a few interviews with key actors from this network, which gave us some insight about how this world works on the inside, but there is still more to be done to take this exploration a step further into the open research tools and technologies community. Oops, got ahead of myself here. So this is why our team chose PubPub, the collaborative publication platform, to draft an essay about our exploration of the open science, open source ecosystem, or as the team calls it, the OZOS ecosystem. PubPub provides a place where team members can continue to interact over time, but also a place where others can find out more about the project and engage with it. There's also a blog post describing the project's preliminary findings and the public repository on Framagit that I already mentioned. So, what does it take to, practice, there we go, open research in social science today? In my experience, it takes using FLOSS tools, but also getting acquainted with open source principles, such as transparency, exchange, collaborative participation, and community-oriented development. It also takes building confidence through exposure and training, documenting your every move like your life depends on it, and fighting against cultural attitudes of insecurity about transparency, around transparency, about intuitive processes or unfinished work. I'd like to close with a reflection that comes from my background in Latin American cultural theory. There's a concept that I find particularly useful for thinking about the way open science and FLOSS development interact. It's called transculturation. The term was coined in the 1940s by a Cuban anthropologist who argued that when different cultures cohabit, they end up influencing and changing each other mutually and end up creating a new culture altogether. I'd like to think this is what FLOSS designers and engineers are doing together with social science researchers to create open research culture in and out of academia. Thank you.
Okay, I think we are live now. So welcome everybody to the Q&A. Thank you, Maya, for being here with us today. So guys, if you can post your questions into the chat room, we will answer it as soon as they come out. I will start with a few questions I have myself. First one will be, as you've mentioned, you have some difficulties, technical difficulties, while doing your inquiry. Did you try to contact actually the developers of your tools you were having trouble with?
That's a great question. No, that wasn't an option in my mind at the time. being new to the culture, I didn't even cross my mind.
Yeah, that's funny, but because actually there are a few tools that you can use to contact devs and try to get help. Do you have more ideas now on how to do that? Or?
Yes, for sure. The first thing I wasn't aware of was the kind of evolution that Floss tools go through. I was used to being presented with software as a package that was a finished product. So I didn't realize that there was, there were things like GitHub where you could interact with people who are actually in the midst of developing new features. And if I'd known that, I think I would have felt at least like going to read about it. And I think I would have needed maybe an extra push to interact with the people who are on the developing end. But now I know it's for real.
So a question from Benjamin, who just presented. So are the academic publications published on your work?
No, they're not published as of not academically published. There's a blog post. And there's a currently that's a work in progress on PubPub, which has not been published yet or open to the public. But I think we were waiting for this day to see what kind of reception and interest we could foment for the project.
Okay. Ask another question. Would you agree if I said that docs and non-techie users are often lacking and tutorial guides assume too much tech knowledge, like about the documentation you went through? Do you think that there can be a place for more effort to help non-techie users?
In the actual wording of the documentation? If it concerns the actual wording of the documentation, I think it was the previous talk was talking about recipes, and I've noticed that in GitHub there's a lot of recipes actually of how to use the tool, and I think a combined recipe plus documentation really does the trick. Yeah. I hope that answers the question.
Okay, next question. So you mentioned five collaborators are more or less in three institutions. What tools do you use for day-to-day collaboration, talking and sharing ideas regularly?
We were using Framegit, which is just an alternative to GitHub. That was the kind of the central tool that we were all collaborating on. And internally, we were using Rocket Chat, which is just an alternative to Slack.
Okay. I will throw my question then. You mentioned that you documented your process yourself. Yes. And what tool did you use to do that? And
I use the wiki. Inside Framegit, there's a wiki function, and I just used it as kind of a research diary, and so every time I would work on the project, I would just try to compile everything that I had done there.
Okay, I have two more questions. First one is, do you now apply on what you're doing the lessons you've learned in this what you've learned in this process?
Yes.
What
is it specifically that I do differently? I think I reach out more readily to people who are involved in the tools, in making the tools and using the tools, other users. And I also look for new tools all the time and new ways of doing things now that I know where to look.
Do you have any recommendation as a user for developers or to make things better for the past you? What would have been easier for you if some devs would have done, I don't know, something? Do you have any ideas?
Specifically for the developers, my advice would go more towards the research community. In terms of developers, I found a very open community that was kind of hidden to me before. I wouldn't have dared go towards a developer because of a fear of lack of knowledge of how to talk about the same things together. But I think that actually applies more to the research communities that use tools and don't know how to interact about them.
Okay, we have a new question. Did you get any pushback from your team or university when you published unfinished data? Did you ever seem against the university culture?
Yes, of course. The advantage I had was that I was doing this as a student, so I didn't have a reputation to put on the line. I know that for established researchers, this is a huge question, and there's a lot of pushback and fear about the unfinished nature of work. And so, yes, I think that would be an obstacle.
Okay. New question. How do you explain that so few social scientists are sensitive to these values of openness and transparency? I'm just going on with the question. As you expose analytical tools used in social sciences university that are mainly proprietary, and which is astonishing compared to political involvement of academics in non-technical uses.
Yes, absolutely. Oh gosh, it's such a complex and deep question. I think
any thoughts you have on this, what made it?
My intuition would be to say that user interface has a lot to do with it, because unfortunately, a lot of proprietary solutions are also very, very simple to use, and they're also made more readily available. Like, they're just pre-installed on machines that are accessible in all institutions, be they public or private institutions, for research. So the question often doesn't even get posed. It's just what's already on the machine. Then if researchers were asked what tools they wanted to use, maybe that would have a bearing on which ones were used in the end. Also, if there were more technical training, I suppose, just in basics about how to use FLOSS tools, I think that would make more people more comfortable. And that's the short answer.
Yeah, that's a good one. Did you ever write an issue on a GitHub repository on a tool you've used?
Yes, for a different project, not for this one specifically.
Yeah. And how was your experience doing that?
Great, I got an answer. And the tool changed, it evolved. So it was great. It was very satisfying and encouraging.
Okay, so we are about to close the Q&A session. Just take a few seconds. Thank you for being here and for your great talk. And we are going to move to the next talk in a